Today on The Independent, Pete and I preview Notre Dame's finale, the Sun Bowl against Oregon State.
Welcome to the latest episode of The Independent. I'm Pete Sampson in the actual desert around El Paso before the Sun Bowl. Matt, back in Chicago before also heading west, but to, I think, a more probably temperate part of the country for the Rose Bowl. But Matt, the big game this week, it's right here. It's in El Paso. You can keep the college football playoff. And look, Notre Dame has a chance to finish with 10 wins. They have a chance to sort of bridge the gap to next season a little bit. In some ways that may carry over, in some ways that may not. You know, Charles Jagasaw, Jeremiah Love, Christian Gray, those are kind of players, Jaden Mickey, those players can travel to next year. Steve Angeli, we'll see. But as you watch the Sun Bowl, I mean, what are you most interested to see? What are you most interested to learn about Notre Dame that may actually carry over into 2024?
Yeah, I don't see any other bowl games, Pete, that have Hank Schrader doing the voiceovers for their previews.
No. So
they've got that going for them.
Someone pointed out it was a little ominous that he was murdered in the show.
Don't spoil it.
Yeah, I'm sorry. At this point,
we didn't say what show. We didn't say what show. Yeah. Look, I think we all process bowl seasons differently, right? I mean, it's obviously a different ball game than it was 2, 3, 4, 5 years ago. I think this week's games, which have for the most part featured Power Five teams, are a little more enlightening than maybe the third or fourth tier games we saw last week. I mean, at the end of the day, if you're a MAC or Sun Belt team and your top players opt out or in the transfer portal, it's not really good football to watch, and there's not a whole lot you can watch. Whereas you see a team like USC last night, and oh wait, who's this Miller Moss guy? Maybe they don't need to go to the portal for a quarterback now, right? Like it didn't change the narrative on USC season, but it certainly stemmed the negativity and maybe turned the page a little bit toward next year, where there'll be a little bit more of a blank slate. I'm not saying Steve Angeli is going to go out there and throw 6 touchdown passes, but I do think if you're either a backup quarterback or a quarterback, and Angeli fits both criteria here, where they've already recruited above you, right? Oh, wait, you're bringing Riley Leonard. You're making a big deal about this. How about I give him the Heisman stiff arm? Let me go out there and show what I can do right now and make you force him to beat me for this job. Or maybe he auditions for a job elsewhere. I don't know. I just think it's a golden opportunity for Steve Angeli, seeing what we've seen from this bowl week so far. I think shows you that there are bits and pieces that, while they don't mean much as it relates to this particular season, there are breadcrumbs that you can kind of cobble together and think, okay, this could mean something for next year. And in the case of Notre Dame, offensively, there are a lot of moving parts there. And I think that's where you're going to hope to see a little bit of that Band-Aid get removed, so to speak, with some of the younger guys.
Yeah, there's a lot that is not going to carry over because your offense coordinator is going to change with Mike Denbrock coming in, who did stop by El Paso, met with the team, sort of get the introduction part of that out of the way and then headed home. But if you're Charles Jagasaw, maybe, you know, Drake Bowen, somebody where there's a starting job open for you, like the Sun Bowl is a chance where you can sort of stake your claim to that, at least be sort of the leader in the clubhouse heading into the off season with Steve Angeli. I think it's applicable a little bit to look back at Tyler Buchner in the Gator Bowl last year. He did enough in that game that if you're Notre Dame, you wanted to see more, even though you were always going to get Sam Hartman. I think that if Steve Angeli goes out and play well, it's not that you're going to tell Riley Leonard thanks, but no thanks, but you're going to set up a spring competition that probably helps Riley Leonard, probably helps Steve Angeli. Whether that comes to pass that he plays and starts again at Notre Dame or not, I don't know. But I think for Angeli, you're in a position where you got a chance to put some stuff out there on tape that another school, like whether you're the Big Ten or ACC school, like you'll look at Steve Angeli on Friday night and think, yeah, this is a Power Five starting quarterback. He just might not have an opportunity to start at the Power Five level where he is right now. But if I'm Maryland, if I'm Rutgers, some school a little bit closer to the East Coast, like I would think that they would be banging down Steve Angeli's door if he plays well on Friday and looks like he can sort of handle the whole operation at a place like Notre Dame.
Yeah, I think that's a great way to put it, especially in this musical chairs world that we're in right now, particularly at the quarterback position. I mean, how many times midseason, you bring up the name Will Howard, and now he might not even have a spot anywhere. And that's a pretty accomplished college quarterback who entered the transfer portal, will not play for Kansas State today in their bowl game, who a lot of people thought was going to go to USC, now maybe won't. I mean, maybe he will, I don't know. But to hear Lincoln Riley post game say, you know, Miller Moss may have scared anyone away from transferred in here. Maybe Devin Brown does the same for Ohio State on Friday as well. They play in the Cotton Bowl the same day Notre Dame plays in the Sun Bowl. I think there are only so many opportunities to go around and play college football at the quarterback position, particularly the Power Five level. And for both Steve Angeli and Ben Gulbertson for Oregon State, I think you got to go into that this game with that mindset. And maybe it's an audition to start or compete for the starting job at Notre Dame next year. Maybe it's an audition to start elsewhere. But to get that on film, to get that on tape, I think that's valuable. I mean, this is a hypothetical that I don't think we'll ever be able to answer, but you brought up the Buckner point. I mean, do you think Alabama, and I know there's obviously the relationship with Tommy Reese there, but I'm sure Nick Saban's a little more open to bringing him in to push Jalen Milroe last spring, having seen him start a bowl game and win a bowl MVP against an SEC opponent, right? If it was a guy who had been gone cold turkey for the last 2 or 3 years, he's probably thinking, what are we bringing this guy in for? So, you know, from an individual perspective, I do think there's a lot of line for a number of players in this game, particularly Steve Angeli and obviously Charles Jagasaw, Jeremiah Love. There are a number of guys on this Notre Dame roster that I'm looking forward to seeing. But it reminds me a little bit of last year in the sense of, you know, there were so many high-end opt-outs for Notre Dame early on to the point where the closer we got to the game, I thought, yeah, South Carolina, I mean, they've got Spencer Rattler. They've got all these dudes. You know, if only they could run the ball and stop the run, they'd have a real chance to win this game. And they almost did. It took a very fluky first quarter, but to give them a chance. But whereas this one, for all the opt-outs in Notre Dame, it's even worse, I think, on Oregon State when you look at what those guys meant to that team, particularly on offense, and the likely lack of depth. And I'm being a little presumptuous here, but I can't imagine the second and third stringers of Oregon State are going to hang the way Notre Dame's second and third stringers, most of whom are underclassmen that have been itching to get a chance like this on the stage. I can't imagine the talent level is equal there. And conversely, this is a top 10 Notre Dame defense in pretty much every category, and almost everyone relevant is suited up for this game. Like, you're going to see Notre Dame's A team on defense here. And I just think against a third string quarterback, and I know Ben Gulbertson isn't your traditional third stringer. You know, he won a bowl game MVP last year. He started 8 games for a 10 win team last year at Oregon State. There are just a lot more moving parts around Oregon State right now than there are Notre Dame, to say nothing of the fact that I just think Notre Dame's a better football team.
Yeah, and Kevense Hinson, Oregon State's interim head coach for the game, referenced that defense in the press conference on Thursday morning here. Not just that they're good, but they're old. The fact that Notre Dame is going to throw out seniors at every defensive line position, if they're a nickel and it's Clarence Lewis, seniors at all the two linebacker positions and the nickel. Xavier Watts, senior. Corner's a little bit younger, but Ben Morrison's one of them. So not the worst thing in the world.
Right.
DJ Brown, also a 6-year senior. So I think that's ultimately why Notre Dame will win the game, is their defense that is going to show up in this game wouldn't look that different if Notre Dame was in the college football playoff. You know, that you don't see that from units in, sort of second level bowls or third level bowls ever. And the modern day college football. So Oregon State's offense was not immune to that. They're down, I think, 3 offensive linemen. They're starting run back, both starting quarterback and their backup quarterback. And their leading receiver, I think, in terms of receptions. And their top tight end. We've seen Notre Dame's defense play against good offenses and shut them down. I don't quite understand how Oregon State's going to score or move the ball on Notre Dame with a patchwork offense. Can they do something fluky and tricky? Maybe similar to second quarter by Wake Forest, where you've got like one good drive of gadget plays that break every tendency you have. Yes. And then after you break those tendencies, you're dead. And I don't know how Oregon State has more to offer than that. Also, like, I believe they are down 7 assistant coaches from their opening day coaching staff, which is also wild. So it's not like they have this huge brain trust of coaches there that can take a funky plan and implement it either. So it's, to me, it just, I don't think Notre Dame is necessarily going to like put it on Oregon State offensively. I just don't know how Oregon State's going to move the ball with any sort of consistency with its own offense.
I mean, it would take, how did South Carolina stay in it last year? Tyler Buckner threw 2 pick sixes in his first start in a while. Steve Angeli.
Yeah, they had a special teams touchdown, right? Like that fake punt, if I'm not mistaken.
Right, and 2 pick sixes. So we're talking about 3 touchdowns, not from the offensive side of the ball. And
yeah,
look, any team that does that, more likely than not, is going to win. Obviously, it didn't happen last year. If Oregon State were to pull that off, I think they'd be in position to win. But that's highly unlikely, even if it is.
Because you're just not going to put Steve Angeli in a position where he throws 2 pick sixes. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I would expect him to manage.
We've used that phrasing with quarterbacks on this year's Notre Dame roster. Yeah. Far too often, have been burned far too often this year.
Telling you, Steve Angeli makes Notre Dame upset proof, Matt.
And there's no actual. Well, Gino Guidoli knows what he's doing, but they don't have the full time offense coordinator or receivers coach right now. So who's coaching the receivers, by the way?
Yeah, Mike Brown is here.
Is he coach?
He took. And I actually asked Marcus Freeman about that today. Obviously he's going to be complimentary of a new coach hire, but I think the way he described Mike Brown reminded me of a quote Tony Alford once gave me about, like, I'm not running happy camp. Whereas like Mike Brown came in and was just like, all right, I'm going to get to know you, but I'm going to coach you hard. And if you like me, great. If you don't, that's fine too. So I think Mike Brown's got maybe a little different personality than what they had with Chancey Stuckey. But it's offensively, Notre Dame kind of needs to just do no harm. That's why I think Jeremiah Love, if you can find a prop bet for bowl MVP and you can put $10 down on Jeremiah Love, I would recommend doing that.
It's funny, if you go on, and I give Oregon State's media relations department a ton of credit here. If you go on really any school website right now and look at the coaching staff, it's really hard to tell when those were updated, because there's so much turnover happening everywhere. At Oregon State, they have like 2 dozen people listed, and some of them just say Sun Bowl colon. And it's like, this is what they're coaching in the Sun Bowl, but this is what they're John Boyer, tight ends, parentheses, Sun Bowl, offense coordinator and quarterbacks, Kefense Hinson, interim head coach / tight ends. Like, there's a lot of moving parts there. It's hard to keep up, and it's a very weird situation that I still don't fully comprehend after learning about this for the better part of a month now, why you would do it this way when you have an internal promotion at head coach. I do appreciate our friends at the Action Network, who have done a tremendous job of keeping track of opt-outs and injuries and portal entrance. And you look at Oregon State's DJ Uiagalelei, Aiden Childs, Jack Velling, starting linebacker Eastern Mascarenhas Arnold, starting safety Achille Arnold, starting corner Jamad McCoy, Anthony Gold, one of their top receivers, opted out. Their starting right tackle opted out. Their starting left tackle and left guard both missed the finale. Damian Martinez, I don't know if he's officially been ruled out, but I don't expect
him. Yeah, he's out.
He is out. Okay, I didn't think he was going to play anyway. And you compare that to Notre Dame's, which it's a long list for Notre Dame, but again, it's guys we kind of expected not to play in this game, right? The Fishers, the Alts, the Estevez, Cam Harden, Thomas Harper, Maris Leofau. That's noteworthy. But I do think that defense is so good and they have enough weapons back there where I don't expect them to miss that big of a beat, especially against a depleted Oregon State offense. And again, there are young guys on this Notre Dame roster, particularly on the offensive line. And we go through this cycle every year because they've got multiple 3-and-outs at this point at the tackle spots, it seems like every year. And it's all right. Can't wait to see this next big thing. We felt the same way about Fisher and Alt 2 years ago. We felt that way about who was even before them. I'm blanking here.
Yeah, I mean, then you're getting back into like the
Liam Eichenberg.
Yeah, Liam Eichenberg, Hainsey, comedy. You know, those guys, you know, Tommy Kramer played early in his career, you know, and that it was just like you're.
I remember McGlinchey playing in the Did McGlinchey play right tackle, I think, in the Pinstripe Bowl?
No. That's Zach Martin played in the Pinstripe Bowl and won bowl MVP. McGlinchey stuck around to play in the Citrus Bowl with Quentin Nelson. That was the end of their time at Notre Dame.
No, but I think McGlinchey as a freshman played as a right tackle in that game.
Oh, that may be. Yeah, he would have been a freshman that season. God, that's so long ago.
And they're both still dominating the NFL.
Yeah, exactly. It just gives you an opportunity to try out some new stuff. And like, I think there's a generational shift with the offensive line. It's not just Jagasaw. It's, you know, also, you know, Billy Shrouth kind of moving into more of the ascendancy. Ashton Craig at center. You know, if Emil Wagner plays more than Tosh Baker, that may be the starting offensive line next year. I don't know if they'll all start together for the bowl game, because I think Tosh Baker will, but if Emil Wagner finishes it, or Tosh Baker, I suppose, like, not unreasonable to think that will be Notre Dame's starting offensive line at A&M a year from now, with Jeremiah Love being the lead running back. But I do think, and I asked Marcus Freeman a little bit about this during the press conference on Thursday, it's just, how does the offense change with Jeremiah Love? Because for all the good things Audric Esme did, and he did a ton of them, he was just a different style of running back than Jeremiah Love. When you give Jeremiah Love the ball, he hits the hole. It feels like 3 seconds faster than Audric Esme could get there, which means you got to block it differently. You know, the offense just fit together with Audric Esme. It was a line that knew how to play with a running back, and they blocked well for him and he ran well for them. Now, Jeremiah Love, how does he fit with this offensive line? They have not played together. So they don't necessarily know how to fit together on a game day, for whatever they've done in practice behind the scenes. So it's, I don't know. I sort of look at the Jeremiah Love and Jadarian Price, how they fit with the offensive line is going to be fascinating to me, because it's something that will carry over to 2024. And there may not be a ton of things that do on Friday afternoon.
Deion Colsey, do you expect him to be full?
Yeah, Deion Colsey is supposed to go. He's been practicing. You know, he made, I think, a pretty nice one-handed or sort of fade out of bounds catch in practice down here during the week. So it's Jaden Thomas, Deion Colsey, Matt Salerno will play. You know, Jordan Faison, Jaden Greathouse, KK Smith is back from the shoulder rehab that he's been doing all season. I would be pretty surprised if it wasn't a heavy diet of Jaden Thomas, Matt Salerno, Jaden Greathouse, and Jordan Faison. And then maybe a drop off after that, but they do at least have some other receivers that they can trot out there, which, considering where they were on December 1st, once Rico Flores entered the portal, you weren't entirely sure how that was going to shake out. So, I mean, all that stuff is, you know, Eli Raridan, Cooper Flanagan, Davis Sherwood. I think you have enough at tight end to do something. You know, you mentioned Mascarenhas Arnold being out. Like, that to me, that's like a devastating blow for that defense. I mean, he's their leading tackler by a wide margin. Notre Dame, I think, if J.D. Bertrand decided not to play, I think Notre Dame would be able to weather that storm. I'm not so sure Oregon State's going to be able to do that with their defensive opt-outs.
One of the best parts of starting the Independent podcast was a chance to pick the brands we wanted to work with, and Roback was at the top of my list. As the owner of multiple polos, hoodies, Q-zips, and shorts, I can tell you the quality, fit, and feel is unmatched. You've probably seen Roback on Audric Esme, Kyle Hamilton, and Michael Mayer. Or maybe you saw the dozen Notre Dame fans wearing the Shamrock polo at the Central Michigan game last weekend. I can tell you I saw Roback gear in Dublin earlier this year. While the gear hasn't made me quite that athletic as those Notre Dame football players, Roback is my go-to on the golf course, heading to the lake, watching my kids' sports, or just walking the dog. So make sure you're comfortable throughout the season with Roback. Use code IRISH for 20% off your first purchase. That's code IRISH for 20% off all hoodies, polos, Q-zips, and more.
Who do you think leads Notre Dame in receiving tomorrow?
I think Jaden Thomas will. You know, I think he's going to, you know, it may not be a lot. It may just be like 5 catches for 64 yards, but you know, if they force the ball to Jeremiah Love, I could see him having 4 or 5 catches. Because I think his skill set is more in space than what Estime was. So that might be a possibility, but overall I would Jaden Thomas, I'd put money on that.
I'm very curious to see the game plan with Steve Angeli, given everything we just said. I mean, realistically, how much are they going to let him do? And I would do what they did with Tyler Buchner last year. And I realized Buchner had a lot more experience at that point than Steve Angeli did. But again, I would, you know, without sacrificing anything, say, this is your moment. We're not going to hamstring you here. You're going to go out there and show what you can do. Not to mention, this isn't the offense we're going to be running next year, you know, verbatim. So, I would get very liberal or more liberal than conservative with my approach here if I were him. Like, I think this is a golden opportunity for him to solidify himself at the very least as a Power 5 quarterback. And I'm fascinated to see what he can do with a newer cast of characters around him.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, I feel like Notre Dame, to their credit, I'm talking about the coaching staff, did a nice job of letting him actually run some offense during the season. Because, I mean, how often have we seen Notre Dame's quarterback number two come in and they ended up taking 75 snaps, but they only attempted 10 passes. They let Angeli actually run the offense in some spots. And I thought he did enough that, like, if you watched him rolling left and hitting Cooper Flanagan for that 19-yard touchdown against Pittsburgh, you're like, all right, well, that looked pretty good. Like, I'd like to see this guy play a little bit more.
I think the peanut butter jelly and jelly time announcement announcing that he was starting showed that play on a loop for what felt like a minute. Play. But they showed it from every different angle. So you're like, oh, this guy's played a lot. No. Yeah, it's the same play.
I mean, it's like you could make an argument that was the best throw by an Notre Dame quarterback all season. I know it was a pretty low stakes moment.
Sure.
But it was a really nice throw from a technical standpoint. So, yeah, I don't think Angeli's going to have any problems about running the operation or the moment being like catching up to him. Like, I think he'll be fine with all that. And then it just becomes a question of how much does the coaching staff ask him to do? And I'm guessing it will be a fairly moderate amount. They're not going to put the game on his shoulders and say, hey, you go win it. They're going to put the game on the offensive line, albeit a rebuilt one. Jeremiah Love, Price, you know, maybe some more two-back set, because that was, you go back to Ohio State, a lot of Jeremiah Love and Jadarian Price out there together. Maybe you can work, I guess that would be 20 personnel, where you have two backs and three wide receivers. That might be an interesting thing to throw out there, because I do think we're at a point now where the slot receiver, whether it's Faison or Greathouse, probably more Faison, is more of an effective threat to your offensively than Eli Raerden or Flanagan. And rarely has Notre Dame been in that spot where their slot receiver was a better weapon than their tight end, but that's just sort of where they are with stuff. So I'd be interested to see if Notre Dame tries to spread Oregon State out a little bit more. Maybe that gets back into the Oregon State back seven is depleted with opt-outs. You can stretch them a little bit that way. That would be one way to play it if I was Marcus Freeman and Gino Gadulli.
Can CJ's car be on the side? I mean, I know he's not active, but can he be on the sideline? Like,
I believe he can be on the sideline,
like
probably
in uniform.
I mean, not, he can't play in the game.
I know, so he can't know play, why. But like, can he like suit up and warm up?
I think he would. That's a good question. I don't know.
Like, as if you were a suspended player, so to speak. Like,
yeah. I wonder if he would just sort of be wearing a jersey. Like, you know, if you're an opt out.
Like Caleb Williams,
the jersey. Just you're in a jersey, you're hanging out on the sideline, and that's about it. I'm not really sure if he'll be able to warm up or not. That would be interesting, because, I mean, you can, even if you're not eligible to play, I think you're always eligible to warm up, right? Like, if you were eligible to practice, you'd be eligible to warm up, and he's here at the bowl game, so can't play in it, but maybe he can warm up a little bit, which. Something to watch before in the pregame there over at the Sun Bowl on Friday. But yeah, I don't know. It's I'll be interested to sort of see how Marcus Freeman comes out of this too. I think that with the Denbrock hire, and I believe Al Golden has also re-upped for Notre Dame. He should feel about as fortified by the administration here as he has maybe ever. Like Notre Dame is set up to really make a run at something next year, and Marcus Freeman, if they get through tomorrow, should go into the offseason with a world of confidence about where the program is headed, I would think.
I would think so too. Is that golden news? Like, did you break news?
I mean, I
know they're working on it, but
yeah, I've referenced it. But I mean, I've been talking to sources on this, like they've got him locked up. Caveat being, if there's an NFL defense coordinator,
that's what I'm saying. Mike Denbrock was locked up at LSU.
You're never really locked up if you're an assistant coach. I mean, probably not locked up if you're a head coach, but an agreement has been struck there where Al Golden wants to stay at Notre Dame. Again, NFL DC opens, Notre Dame might have an issue, but
The Athletic has a pretty big profile today on one.
Yeah.
I got Lou Anaremo. Did I say that right?
I believe so. Anaremo. That would be one that is probably worth paying attention to. But other than that, I think that, man, if you can have Denbrock and Golden together with Riley Leonard coming in, the Xavier Watts, who has not announced coming back, everyone else coming back on defense that says they're coming back, decent running back room, decent receiver room, you know, good.
I'd say the running back room is better than decent.
Yeah, no, it's definitely better than decent. Solid, we'll say. It's just a lot to work with, man. Notre Dame, I know that some people who follow other programs like to give Notre Dame some stick for being like kind of overhyped. But this offseason, if Notre Dame gets the boost from beating Oregon State, or at least, you know, not losing the Sun Bowl, I think that they will be sort of a trendy team to watch all offseason.
They will be, for better and for worse, because their toughest game might be that opener. And because of that, it's going to be a referendum on them, right? Like you just mentioned the offseason hype. They lose that game, it's up. Here we go again. Told you. And if they win it, look out. Look at the way that schedule opens up for them. You know, it's kind of a little bit like Florida State and LSU going into this year, who played each other in week one. But no, I'm with you. I mean, this is... Sorry about that. It's always a family member trying to come in here this time.
Yeah, Sloan was trying to FaceTime me during Marcus Freeman's press conference today to talk about her new basketball shoes. So I'm with you. I can relate a little bit.
Are those from Santa?
They were not from Santa. They were from Dick's.
Okay. We need to get quick tangent. We need to get Father Nate back on the show, because first thing my kid asked me today, this morning when she woke up, is, do you think they have pools in heaven, Daddy?
No. He would know, right?
He should know. Yeah, I've never considered that before. We were talking about... Oh, yes. I was going to say, imagine waking up on Christmas morning, or really any morning this past week, as an Notre Dame fan versus even a week ago, and just how much better you feel about things.
It's, I mean, I was thinking back to like when Rico Flores entered the portal. I was like,
yeah, it was...
This isn't going well. Good. Like... This feels off and moving in a negative direction. And then 3.5 weeks later, we're like, Notre Dame. Like, maybe a trendy host a playoff game pick, if not be a top four, which would still mean host a playoff game pick. I think Marcus has done a really nice job of kind of coming through a storm, which he's done in season before. But I'm not sure he's done it as successfully in an off season as he's done over the last 3 weeks. Would you agree with that?
No, there's no, I guess the only comp would have been last year's OC search, and you could argue we'd never bounce back from that. But yeah, I mean, I think so. I mean, in season, you're right. He's had multiple moments over his first 2 years where you really took a step back and you thought, geez, like this might not be going so well. Like,
yep.
Going into the USC game this year in particular. And we've seen him and that program rally, just like the Clemson game a year ago. So, this was always going to be and still is a very, very important offseason for Marcus Freeman going into year three. Part of it's luck, let's face it. But, you know, this past week, it really turned the narrative, I think, on the direction of this program going.
Yeah, I mean, I felt like next year.
So much renewed optimism, Mike Dembrock aboard.
A month ago, I would have described year three as sort of a rebuilding year for Marcus Freeman. And I sure as heck don't feel that way now. I mean,
I would never go that. I would never go that far, but
I'm not saying like 4-8 rebuilding year, but just I would have thought the program a month ago was in a position where like maybe would have taken a step back next year. But I didn't think that Kaiser, Mills, Cross and Watts would all come back. And Watts has yet to announce, but I think it's optimism there. I didn't think the OC would be upgraded in the way that it's being upgraded. I like the strength coach. Like there's optimism about, you know, I know the new facility won't be done by next season, but there's optimism about that. When I talked to people about the new strength coach, he was hired with that new facility in mind about some different training spaces, recovery spaces. Like, I think that, Jack Swarbrick did not get a national title in football, but I give him a ton of credit for pounding the table for football on, you know, in this last calendar year to give Marcus Freeman everything it looks like he will need to succeed that Notre Dame can conceivably give him and still be Notre Dame. That's not always been an easy position to take at Notre Dame, to say like, no, we need to spend, we need to do longer contracts, we need to do this now. I think it was one of Brian Kelly's frustrations, but I mean, I think Jack Swarbrick is really closing on a high note here in terms of putting football in a position to have success.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, I don't know if you, I know John Bryce reported this. He said Dembrock's going to have a 4-year deal, which is completely unprecedented for an American assistant. It's usually really around the country. It's usually 3 if you're really good, as Dembrock is.
That's how they close. I mean, I think that's really one of the reasons that they closed the deal with Dembrock is like, we're going to pay you a comparable amount. I mean, I was told it was a little bit less than LSU, but we're going to put another year on it. And they're like, all right. And I think Dembrock wanted to be here too. That was, you know, maybe the most important part of it.
Well, can contrast that to how they lost Elko way back when.
Oh God. That's like,
I mean, they lost a bidding war, but Elko would have stayed if all things were equal, but he went to sign the deal. It was a one-year deal. And he was like, wait a minute, Brian Kelly's on the hot seat here. A&M's offering me this, this, and this. It's different. It's a lot different. And I think college football, everything's open now, right? Like, for the relatively speaking, like there's the portal, opt-outs, transfers, especially in December, everyone sees what everyone's doing. And I think for better or for worse, there's this unspoken keep it up with the Joneses kind of ethos that it takes to succeed at college football at the highest level. And especially with a 12-team playoff right around the corner, I think you realize, especially if you're Notre Dame, there's a golden opportunity in front of us right here. Let's not miss our mark. And even from a year ago, I mean, it's not just getting Mike Dembrock. It's getting Mike Dembrock 3 days after you lost your OC.
Yeah.
Especially in light of last year, because the fear wasn't losing Jared Parker. It was, Christ, are we going to go through this again? Like, do they know what they're doing? And yes, it's done quickly. Like, signed, sealed, and delivered. No questions about it.
Yeah, highly professional move there from Notre Dame's coaches, Notre Dame's admin, and the representatives for all of them together. Like, it was a seamless process as it could ever have been for what went down for Notre Dame.
And that's the type of stuff that it's almost unspoken, right? Like it eases your fears and anxieties without even coming up. It's just one less thing you have to worry about.
Professional operation. I mean, Notre Dame had it was a very professional operation in the Parker to Dembrock transition. And like, give Notre Dame a ton of credit for that. I mean, they weren't last year was not good. This year was as good as it gets. I mean, you cannot do any better than what they did in terms of the timing, the expedience of it, the investment, who you got, the fit of who you got. I mean, it's really impressive. So I think Notre Dame deserves a ton of credit for that.
Have you seen, by the way, Mike Dembrock's new Twitter header?
I have not.
Oh, I feel like this is right up your alley. I got to pull this up here. just for our YouTubers here. Oh, wait, where's my camera? It's his high school photo from Homer, Michigan, complete with the old Beatles haircut.
Oh, yes. I love that. That is fantastic. Awesome. Yeah, and the American flag is your avatar. Way to go, Mike Denbrock. Football coach. But it still says he's from Baton Rouge, Louisiana. I guess that will change.
Looks like it's straight out Dazed and Confused or something. I love it.
It does. I can't wait.
He's going to have the coach. He's going to have every Notre Dame player sign a contract this offseason.
Neck roll and everything.
They're not going to the Aerosmith concert.
He's got some good stories to tell along the way, too. He had a good one about Brian Kelly and being the travel coordinator and them staying at a casino, I think at a Grand Valley playoff game.
Oh, I thought you said that's from LSU.
No. I think there was a casino all the time for Brian Kelly at LSU. All right. Predictions for Friday. What do you got?
The line is 6.5. I preface it to say Vegas knows this stuff a lot better than I do, although bowl season is the literal wild, wild west. I've got Notre Dame 31-14. I think they cover and go over. I think 41.5 is where the over-under is right now. It seems a little low, even though I understand Notre Dame is really good defense. I don't know how Oregon State stops Notre Dame's offense. That's not to say Notre Dame's offense is going to light it up, but I think Notre Dame's biggest enemy is Notre Dame in this one when it comes to offensive football and the unknowns and a lot of young guys who might not be on the same page yet. When that's the case and you're better than your opposition, I'm a lot more confident in you than I am them. I think they have better players. They have a more intact coaching staff, weirdly enough, despite all the changes. And I just think everything in that regard goes in their direction. And look, there's the whole effort and energy and who cares. Like, that stuff's real in bowl season. And at least the people who are there for Notre Dame, they really want a 10th win and they really don't want a fourth loss. And I think that's very, very important going into a game like this one. So I've got Notre Dame winning decisively.
I agree. I sort of have uttered this prediction elsewhere, but like in an homage to a different Notre Dame bowl game that I called massively incorrectly, I'm going Notre Dame 33, Oregon State 9, which was the final score of the Camping World Bowl from way 19. Back when. I'm with you, but I'm also more inclined to think like, I don't know how Oregon State's offense is going to move the ball. I could see the game being close at halftime, sort of like 13-7 or, you know, 10-3 or 16-6. But then Notre Dame getting loose in the second half and Oregon State not being able to move the ball at all after halftime. Maybe even Jeremiah Love will have a long touchdown run like Tony Jones did against Iowa State. Who knows?
What age worse, that prediction or Brock Purdy's MVP campaign this year?
I don't know. I feel like that prediction was DOA midway through the first quarter. Like, Brock Purdy's MVP campaign at least had like lasted a week. It was not a good prediction. I've had fun with it, and if I didn't, I'd go crazy.
Matt Campbell still at Iowa State. I would not have guessed that. Plus years later.
Yeah, that was quite a show. But I think Notre Dame it may be close at halftime. I don't think it's going to be competitive in the second half. So if there's a second half prop line where Notre Dame was, I don't know, 10.5 point favorites, I would bet Notre Dame there. I may try looking for that after we wrap up this podcast. But I like Notre Dame to have a very strong second half and pull away after a game that may be a little nip and tuck in the first half.
You're in the literal desert right now. I'm sure you can.
Yeah, I can find somebody. I have friends in the desert.
Friends in the desert. There you go. One of them, a former guest, could be calling the game on the sideline. Tim Murray. I'm sure he's got some ins for you if you want to
put
a few bucks his way.
Yeah.
I am curious to see the player props. I haven't seen any live right now, but at kickoff, usually for colleges, these things come about. I'm not recommending to bet on any of them because college player props on their own are risky, and in a bowl game, they're even riskier. But I do want to see what they are and where whoever does play in.
Well, maybe that could be a good post-game independent discussion for a post-game podcast after the Sun Bowl, which should be interesting and enlightening. I don't think I'll have a coach text me while I'm still writing like I did after the Camping World Bowl when a coach on staff was like, was that focused enough for you? Because he knew that I picked Iowa State to win the game. But we will be back. I will keep wanting to say Saturday, even the game is on Friday. But yeah, we'll be back post game. I don't know if I'm going to find a coaching booth to podcast in because the press box there is a little bit cramped. But Matt and I will be back post game of the Sun Bowl, Notre Dame, Oregon State.
Does the winner get like I didn't know, like, the Mayo Bowl is one thing, and God bless them, it's actually very, very entertaining. I didn't know the Holiday Bowl did a celebratory eggnog dip like they did with Lincoln Riley. Does the winner of this game get
the Frosted Flakes bath?
Frosted Flakes, yeah.
I don't know. You know, I'm going to go back and look to see maybe some
Narduzzi, right?
Fun, yeah, photos of the Sun Bowl last year. So it they should. If they don't, I definitely want to get a selfie with Tony the Tiger on the sideline if I can make that happen. So that's kind of one of my goals for the postseason. But
I think you can make that happen.
I think so. Well,
you could be a guest.
Yeah. On that note, thanks for being with us on this preview episode for the Sun Bowl. He's Matt. I'm Pete. As always, you can find The Independent on Apple Podcasts, Spotify. You can subscribe. Please do to our YouTube channel. Helps with visibility of the show. But until Friday, tomorrow, you may even be listening to this podcast on Friday morning. So Friday today. He's Matt. I'm Pete. Thanks for being with us on the latest episode of The Independent.